Yes.
Yes Cymru Radio.
Yes.
Radio Free Wales.
Yes.
Hello, Samai, and welcome to Radio Yes Cymru. It's the 9th of December 2020, and it's time for independence.
Yes.
Yes Cymru Radio.
My name's Will Evans, and I'm delighted to be here with you as a guest host. I'm usually to be found at Rock and Roll Farming Podcast, but tonight I'm here to talk about one of the most important sectors in the Welsh economy, agriculture, and how it could look and thrive in an independent Wales. And to do that, we are delighted to be joined by fellow farmer and North Walian Rachel Madeley-Davis and solicitor, farmer and manager of the Yes Fermwyr Group, Rodri Jones. Croeso, welcome to you both.
Diolch, Will.
Yeah, diolch, Will. Good evening.
Right, let's go to some introductions first. Tell us a bit about yourself and where you are in Wales and what type of farm you have. Rachel, let's go to you first.
Right, so I'm actually based in beautiful North Wales, as you've said, and I'm just outside the town of Bala in the Snowdonia National Park. So my husband and I here, we have a hill farm, so we farm organically. We farm beef and sheep. I also have a work off farm, so I'm an agricultural consultant. So well and truly, completely sort of deep into agriculture, both in Wales and beyond.
Okay, and what about you, Rodri?
Well, quite an unusual way into farming, probably not from a farming background, but always had an interest. Trained as a solicitor, moved into agricultural law, still do some of that. But met Suwan, moved back to her parents' farm in Mid Wales, and basically just loved farming. So that's what I've done full time for 6-7 years now. And beef and sheep, but we're about to convert part of the farm and enter into a joint venture. And that's going to be a spring calving grass based dairy. So quite exciting.
Wow, exciting times. So when did you first become aware of Welsh independence as a thing, Rodri? Was it something that you've been a lifelong supporter of, or is it a more recent thing, or are you still at the curious stage and just want to know a bit more about it all?
I think the heart has been in Indy Wales since forever, I think. I think proud Welsh Welshman, and just seeing everything around you, and I think you would want decisions about Wales made in Wales. I think growing up sort of 80s, early 90s, I think I came from a rural area, but there was also, you know, the remnants of mining as well, which was hit very hard during that time. So I think just generally family was for an independent Wales. Parked the issue almost. I think the devolution sort of parked the issue for a lot of people for many a year, but then you pick it up last couple of years, and although the head was probably slow to follow the heart because of a lot of the information that you're being fed almost, which is union centric, and I think once you get down to the nitty-gritty and seeing what Wales is possible of, then I think the head followed pretty quickly. And I think it boiled down to one question to me, and it was, what makes Wales so uniquely incapable of being independent? And nothing. So, you know, once you've said, well, Wales is just as capable as any other country of being independent, then if you want it, then it is possible.
Yeah. And what about you, Rach? You're a politics graduate. What are your thoughts on Welsh independence?
Yeah, well I think I'm pretty sort of apolitical, which, you know, is quite odd for perhaps somebody who's got a degree in politics, but I think I'm in this sort of strange sort of what I describe as a no man's land. So I'm neither sort of raringly for independence nor against it. I think I see that there are real benefits to having an independent Wales. But I think probably my reservations probably lie in economics at the moment. However, I am confident that a number of things, and in particular what we're talking about tonight, actually do give us a bit of a vehicle for overcoming those issues in terms of economics. And I think that possibly it is a little bit of a chicken and egg, I think, for me. And that And that's how I see the whole independence movement in terms of really gaining ground and actually becoming really viable. That it's almost, we need to sort out the perhaps the economics issue and sort of cut those ties in terms of our monetary reliance on Westminster before independence in terms of what could be really tangible can sort of move forward.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, similar-ish for me as Rodri, really, in that I was very close to my grandmother growing up, and she was very literary, if that's a word, and taught me a lot about sort of Welsh history and things. And she, in that sort of very Welsh working class way, I suppose, the Deptford culture. And I was always very conscious of Welsh history, and it was always kind of there in my heart of the sort of ancient history in Wales, but also the more recent history. And we had a very progressive history teacher in school who we studied parliamentary reform in the 19th century. So we read Rape of the Fair Country and obviously the Chartists and the Yarmouth Uprising and the Rebecca Riots and everything like that. So it was always kind of in the back of my mind, that sort of frustration, I think, even as a young boy. But it's really only as I've got older and become a bit more politically engaged. And I suppose the last 4 years of Westminster rule or Westminster Circus has massively accelerated those feelings for me. I can no longer relate to anything that's happened in Westminster, and I don't see that getting any better anytime soon. So, I mean, has Brexit and the last few years accelerated those feelings for you as well, Rodri?
Yes, I think so. A few things probably have sort of cropped up in the last few years. You get more mature, you start thinking about these things again. But certainly, you know, Brexit, fine, whichever way you voted, it's happening. But I think the way it's been dealt with by Westminster has been appalling. And I think what we are seeing now through legislation coming through, which will affect Wales, a trade bill, agriculture bill, you've got the internal market bill. You know, we are going to get, as a country, you know, very, very badly affected. But as a sector in Wales, we are going to get absolutely hammered. And it's, you know, I'm passionate about farming. I'm passionate about Wales. And I like you probably, I just can't see a reason now to hang on in there. I mean, look at the union now. If you had the option of joining, would you?
No.
Well, no, I mean, no, rhetorical.
I think it's right, though, isn't it? If you think about in terms of devolution, the fact that agriculture is obviously a devolved issue, but actually what's reflected during sort of our sort of moving up to our sort of exit from the EU is actually the fact that it's so much more. So actually trade actually underpins into our sort of agricultural system, and yet that's not a devolved issue. And actually there does need to be a bit more crossover and a more sort of holistic view. So you can therefore see that although devolution obviously sort of, as Roger said before, it perhaps fed crumbs to the movement for a while, it doesn't give that full sort of set of control that you need, that much more sort of holistic control over these things.
I don't want to dwell too much on Brexit, but you know, as we've already highlighted, it's kind of a huge effect on farming and all of us personally. Rodri, you wrote a very good article that was published earlier this week about some of the announcements that have been made around future food and farming policy across the border in England lately. Perhaps you could just summarise that now for people who haven't read it, and how you feel about some of the changes that are coming there, and how closely or otherwise you feel that Welsh Government will follow suit.
Yeah, well, I was just going through a few announcements and the ELM scheme that's just been sort of announced for England. I think it's hugely disappointing for farmers in England. The cap under the EU was obviously quite a confused policy by the end, with so many competing interests and its history from being a production, a social, an environmental policy. And it seems, rather than really looking at what it could do to change farming in England, I think the ELMs is an equally confused policy with you know, talk of an increase in productivity and you know, poorly thought out sort of ecological sort of plans as well. I just think it's a non-starter. My worry for Wales is that given the language that's been used in the several consultations that we've now had over the last couple of years, that it's going to be a similar scheme. And I think with these, what we're doing is perpetuating the industry's reliance on subsidy. We're always looking for, you know, something other than the value of food itself to make farms viable. And really, if we take a step back and look at food, and the elephant in the room is essentially, you know, big retail control on what trickles back down the supply chain. So if we solve that, then we also solve the need for subsidy, the need for, you know, for something to bring up the farmers. So I think there is a very narrow approach in Elms, and I worry that it's going to be a narrow look at the farm, look at the landscape approach in Wales, rather than, look, we can actually transform people's diets, we can transform public health, the environment, ecology, rural economy. All these things should be part of one and the same. And what I didn't say in the article, but I just worry that, you know, being tied in, as we are being tied in at this minute by the Internal Market Bill, Wales will be unable to take decisions that it needs to do in order to do the best for its economy. If we follow Westminster, we're doing the best for the economy of South of England.
Yeah. And what do you think, Rich, about what's happening and some of the announcements that have been coming from Westminster lately?
I suppose in terms of where Wales is, it'd be interesting, and I'd be interested to see what Rodri's thoughts are, really, in terms of how it could create an even bigger division in terms of a level playing field, even within the UK as a whole. You know, that actually, at least before there was a common umbrella in terms of CAB. I mean, I understand that obviously it was divvied out in different ways and different schemes, but actually there is then this possibility that we could be even more sort of, you know, have even more sort of difference between farmers in Wales and England, and actually how that would pan out. And so I'm more interested in many ways. I mean, I'm a slight optimist, I suppose. You know, I think you always look for the opportunity in things, but I think that would be my concern overall, is looking at the UK as a whole, is how that then widens that sort of level playing field in terms of Wales and England. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Rodri.
I think it's going to be very difficult as we move on. I mean, there was a small window, I think, at some point during all this sort of these Brexit negotiations, where many industries, including farming, could have actually, you know, really pushed on and made the most of Brexit. But I think that window's closed and is boarded up, and you know, it's got a lot of way to be opened again. The Internal Market Bill is my main concern with that, because what that does is essentially introduce a lowest common denominator. So if Wales wanted, and we look at, you know, the recent Bangor University study now, that says that Wales could actually be potentially producing the most sustainable meat in the world. Well, that's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, if we get a few other things right, then we should be, as farmers, we should be, you know, we should be benefiting from that. But the worry is that, you know, we won't be, because if standards in other parts of the UK are brought down, then we have to allow them to be sold next to ours. There are challenges upcoming, and I think essentially being part of a union that wants to bring things down is bad news long term.
Okay, well, let's go to you, Reg, on this question. With you being the self-confessed optimist in the room, what would you like to see done differently in Wales going forward? You know, it's not all bad, is it? It does look like there will be much more focus on environmental improvements and sustainable farming methods, and I know that's something that you employ a lot of on your own farm. That's got to be a good thing, hasn't it? As Rodri's already mentioned, the study from Bangor University revealing that Welsh farms do have among the lowest greenhouse gas emissions from comparable systems in the world. So we're already ahead of the game in that regard, aren't we?
We are, and I think I do think that is really one of our sort of trump cards in many ways. I also think, I know it's really difficult, isn't it, balancing in terms of our food security as a nation and what we provide as food, but actually understanding that we are amidst a climate crisis at the same time. But I actually think in Wales that not only can we produce food sustainably, which we've learned this week, sort of underpinned by science. But actually, I think there's a real opportunity for us to harness our natural resources much more in Wales. And I think in terms of viewing the backdrop of independence, I mean, I think this is the crux of it. You know, if you think about the electricity we export, the water we export, and I think it could be an economic game changer. And obviously, this underpins our agricultural sector, because we need to remember that actually, who has these goodies? And it's land managers, it's farmers. So I think there are some real opportunities to be realised. But I think what we need to do is, it's not just about reliance on government funds, but it's actually looking to the marketplace for these things as well. Because obviously that's a problem largely with our sort of primary agriculture, is it's that sort of market failure. But actually, it's recognised a market for our natural resources too, rather than it being reliant on a government subsidy. So I think there are some opportunities, but I think we've got to be very challenging, and we've got to have a complete mindset change in how we sort of make them fruitful for us.
Yeah. Now, farmers care for more than 80% of the land area in Wales, more than 1.84 million hectares. And that provides a backdrop for a tourism industry worth 2.8 billion. There's a lot of talk from many different sectors of brand Wales, isn't there? So how do you think that farmers can play a part in that and benefit from it? Because I feel that there's so much potential for rural communities there, isn't there? Roger, perhaps you can go first.
Yeah, I think particularly in other parts of the world, I think agritourism, so specifically farm-based tourism, is far bigger than it is in Wales, and that's something that could develop. But, you know, go back to what Rachel was saying, you know, we do need to maybe have a mindset change. You know, if you're a farmer, right, I've got produce going out the gate and that's it. Well, you know, you're cutting yourself off potentially from a lot of other sources of income there if you view yourself as a farmer in such narrow terms. So, but again, the narrowness of policy, you look at you know, diversification, it's always the same old options, isn't it? Mm. You know, it's a self-catering let, or it's a conversion of buildings or something like that. You know, open yourself up. But I think that takes a mindset change from farmers, but also from government as well when they're putting things together. And you look at the strengths Wales has, and how rural it is. Like you say, 80% of the land is agricultural land. You know, there's enormous potential there, and tourism could grow. You know, we could talk about tourism tax as well, you know, to pay for some of the infrastructure, because that's one thing that's missing in a lot of Wales, broadband, you know, and road and public links as well. You know, it could be a real, like you say, it's an often used word, game changer, but it really could be. I think we're ignoring a lot of our strengths.
Mm. And Rachel, you live in a very tourist heavy area there up near Bala. Would you go along that? You know, are you seeing opportunities there? Are many of your neighbours diversifying and making the most of tourism?
Absolutely. You know, a number of our sort of neighbours and friends have diversified to tap into the tourism trade, and I think, and you know, and unfortunately, you know, Roger mentioned there that obviously we've been pushed for years, perhaps, to develop barns to convert to accommodation, because as a viable source of diversified income. But actually, this year it has unfortunately sort of bitten some people because that income's dried up. But so I think, I mean, that to me highlights how it's really important to have a diversified sort of source of income. But actually, looking perhaps at your farm a bit more sort of holistically and seeing what it can deliver. But sorry, I digress. Going back to actually tourism and farming, I think we just forget, don't we, that actually Wales doesn't look the way it looks by accident, that actually it's largely managed farmed landscape. And without the sort of careful management of farmers, it just wouldn't look the way it does. And I think sometimes that is completely underestimated. And actually, there's no value or no market for that per se. So, I mean, I think that there's so much untapped potential, but it does need direction. It needs leadership. And we've got to have, you know, the right policies to deliver that.
Mm. Yeah, just following on from something you said, Rodri, there. importance of direct selling and shorter supply chains. You know, we know that people in Wales are very patriotic. They like to buy Welsh produce. And as we've already talked about, you know, we do have some of the most sustainably produced and best tasting food in the world here. You know, how can farmers in Wales meet that huge demand for produce straight on the farm? And when we've seen that demand with COVID in the last 12 months just go through the roof. But many of us don't have experience with it. As you said, you know, we just sort of let it go out the gate and, you know, we're time poor. There's not many of us on farms. You know, how do we tap into that and what opportunities are there for us here in rural Wales?
If I go first, but I'll let the retail sort of expert come after me. Rachel's had a fantastic experience in that neck of the woods as well. But I don't think direct selling is for everyone. Like you say, some farms are stretched in terms of staffing, and it's very difficult to achieve everywhere. You're location dependent as well. So it's not a quick fix for everyone. However, you know, capturing more of the value of the supply chain and keeping it in communities is so essential to change the way essentially farm economics work and food economics work. At the minute, it's just leaving our communities and never coming back. So whatever you can do, you know, maximize the value. That could be clubbing together with local farmers. And it's a real shame that, you know, cooperatives have had such a shaky sort of history here. I think they work fantastically well in other countries. And the returns to farmers suggest that you know, there's a real good place for them, or not even cooperative, some sort of, you know, joint working that, you know, either reduces your costs or increases what you can ask for your product. I think we really need to look at that element. Otherwise, we'll just, I think, limp from one subsidy sort of scheme to the next and always sell commodity and let someone else sort of boss us about a bit. I don't know what Rachel thinks about that because she's been at the sharp end.
It is. I'm a bit mixed, really. And I'll be honest, you know, having sort of worked, you know, for two estates who did direct selling, it's something that I'd never want to do myself on farm. So whether that gives you a lesson or not, I don't know. However, I mean, I'm a real advocate of actually having a mix. And I completely, funnily enough, I already wrote the word co-op down before you even said it, because I think that is a fundamental flaw throughout the sort of the system, is that we don't do enough sort of cooperatively from purchasing to selling. But I think what I mean by a mix is I do think that local supply chains are really essential. However, I suppose I've got to keep in mind the sort of products that I produce on my farm here. And unfortunately, they're not priced for everyone to have. You know, we're producing, you know, organic PGI Welsh lamb, which, you know, it's not a cheap product, I'm going to be honest. And what we will derive value actually from really strong export markets as well for our product. So I think it's about striking a balance almost, isn't it? That does improve sort of farm gate profits of having those sort of localized supply chains, but provided those local people can afford them, but also ensuring that you actually can improve that cost as well by having good export as well. I suppose probably one of my big conflicts always is about food, and I feel I'm in a very fortunate position that I don't really consider how much money I spend on food, and I count myself very lucky for that, but I'm also acutely aware that a lot of people do. And I think sometimes this is a personal conflict I have producing what I would regard as a premium product. And actually the fact that I'm not going to be feeding the world, I'm not going to be feeding a lot of people in Wales with my product purely on price. And I think sometimes perhaps I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are on this, Rodri, and how we can stabilise that sort of food security, but also making sure that farms are profitable as well in our rural communities.
Yeah,
I suppose it's broader policy.
Actually, I got a question for Will later on about this as well. But I think that there is a huge conflict. But I also think you have to look at what price you as a producer are getting for that lamb and what price the consumer is paying for it. And, you know, where in the chain is most of it taken up as well. So improving the lot of farming communities and the rural economy around them does not necessarily come with increasing price for consumers. Perhaps organic is a separate issue because that is a premium product. But certainly in terms of a normal sort of grass-fed lamb in Wales, you know, it's just a case of shifting, you know, who gets what from the supply chain, I think, rather than increasing price significantly. Prices, of course, cheap, you know, food is cheaper than it's ever been, but that doesn't make it easier for anybody who's you know, having to almost ration when they're going shopping. I think the food market is clearly broken and it just needs rethinking. And unfortunately, I go back to the fact that, you know, our current thinking on policy just completely ignores that fact. I don't know if you want to come back on that, or I've got a question for Will on this in an arable context as well.
You far away at Will then.
so obviously you're a bit farmer.
Go on. I'm more comfortable asking questions and answering them, Roger. But go on.
So you're a mixed farmer. You've got arable. I assume it's more difficult in that context then to direct sell. You know, we're talking of people with almost niche products. So that's why I say it's not suitable for solving all the issues.
Yeah, I mean, we probably, like a lot of farms at the moment, you know, we're looking at diversification and changing our systems a little bit. I mean, we grow mostly cereals that nearly all go to a local feed mill that then are sold on to local dairy farms or sheep farms. You know, that's where nearly all our cereal goes. So, in terms of growing the quality, so making wheat or in this part of the world would be quite difficult, just with the amount of rain we've had and the amount of flooding we've had over the last few years, especially. It's a big problem for us. Cattle, you know, we put a few big numbers through, we sell them straight into a market. You know, my wife's looked at it with dipping our toe into the direct market at the moment, maybe different thing. My children have started selling eggs and things like that, which they're enjoying. And interestingly, one of the nice things about that, I suppose, and one of the good things about direct selling is it does. It brings us back into contact with people, with our customers, I think, who, in my experience, just love to know where their food comes from. And I think, you know, for a number of years, there has been a gap. You know, I don't think as farmers, we've been very good at telling people about how the food they eat is produced. I think direct selling does give us a good opportunity to do that. But as you both say, you know, it is for everybody. It is not a magic bullet solution. You know, not everybody's in the right place for a start. So, and as you might say, not everybody wants to. You know, but yeah, it's only something we're looking at. And I know a lot of farms around are very successful farm shops just up the road from here. Yeah, I think there are opportunities there, but again, it's not a magic bullet solution, I think, for farm incomes. But for food that is sold into the market, which is, you know, where most of us still sell into, how important do you think that Welsh dragon flag on our produce is? And do you think there's potential in the future in an independent Wales to really increase exports of Welsh food around the world, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Welsh dragon is so important. But, I mean, I still think we've got ground to gain. And I'd like to compare us a little bit with France and the French sort of culture of eating. You know, you go to any French supermarket and, you know what's produced in France because they're so proud of it. And it's very seasonal and every product that is, and it's very regional as well as just French flag. Actually, it's regional. So whether it's, you know, from Breton or Normandy, it's so obvious. And actually, French people want to go and buy French produce and regional French produce at the right time of year. And I actually think that we could move to a similar thing. I mean, obviously, it's about perhaps fixing our sort of attitude towards food at first. But I think there's a massive opportunity. And then what happens then is you start to really build this brand. And then I think in terms of the world stage, you know, and underpinned with that evidence that we've seen this week from Bangor, actually, you've got a really good story to tell. And that's the whole point of a brand, is you've got a story to tell and you've got real values that underpin that brand. So, yeah, no, I think that there's some real sort of longevity in that.
Yeah, I go along with what Rachel says. I think the key in the next probably 10 years is capitalizing on our, you know, climate-friendly methods, basically, and try to break away from these global figures that are quoted all the time. You know, the recent report says, you know, we are probably, I can't, couldn't remember the figures, but we're a fraction of what the global average is, and certainly, you know, a lot less, again, than the big producers, say, in the US and Brazil. So we really need a strong message to give people the confidence that if they're going to eat meat, dairy, and everything else that, you know, is being quite hammered in the media at the minute, that, you know, the one they need to turn to is Welsh.
Mm. Okay. What other concerns do you have? You know, what needs to improve in Welsh agriculture? I mean, are we diverse enough as an industry, for example? You know, that we're strong in sheep and beef and dairy, but do we need to be expanding other sectors or vegetables? You know, there's an increasing market for Welsh wines or vineyards, and a lot of people I've spoke to for my podcast in England are looking at agroforestry systems. That seems to be something that has huge potential in Wales. So, you know, what could we improve, and what support we'd like to see from Welsh government towards this, if any? Or is this something, as you said earlier, Rachel, that we need to innovate with ourselves? Go to you first.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think I'm always a bit of a believer that actually a lot of things and change should be driven from the person itself, you know, rather than it being a policy or a grant to make you do it, that actually there should be a bit of a business case for it, and also that you should have an interest in it, because yeah, it's more likely to be successful then. But I am a strong believer in that we can achieve so much more in Wales than what we currently do in terms of food output. And I think probably, shout me down if you disagree, I'm confident you probably won't, but I think the current system has cushioned businesses that obviously that aren't viable, producing products that actually quite largely the market doesn't want. So what we need to do is start listening to our consumer a bit more, start looking at consumer demands, and actually just get a bit more innovative, possibly seeing our farms a little bit as an experiment and actually seeing what they can achieve. Because I mean, I'm confident that actually sometimes we can almost go full circle. You know, for example, here, you know, we talk about our farm, and actually we probably quite often we talk about that we can only produce grass. But, you know, historically, if you look around field names, you know, you've got Kai Hythe, and, you know, and actually historically what this farm would have produced would be a lot different than it is today. And we're no sort of exception in Wales. So I think what we need to start doing is look back a little bit to see what we have done, but also look forward and see what we can achieve using new technologies as well.
Hmm. And what about you, Roger?
Yeah, I think if you look back at probably the history of the subsidy or support payment systems, I think once they went sort of on a headage basis and that sort of stuff, it took a wrong turn in terms of giving, you know, the confidence of people to keep their farms diverse and mixed, because there was a payment for simply, you know, having sheep on your land or whatever it was. So I think that was sort of the beginning of the end in that period of a lot of diverse farms, and they went on a one-track system just to chase the subsidy. And I think the cap has been to blame for a lack of innovation and just keeping people along. I'm not saying that without reform of the food market you can take away subsidy, but it's certainly meant that the industry, certainly as someone who's come into it, it plays it safe. It, you know, ensures that it, you know, meets the requirements to get the support payment, and you know, that's the marker from year to year. That's what it seems like to me anyway. So I think an innovative policy would help. I think recognition from the government of the day, wherever it is, that they have contributed to a position where we are in now that makes it difficult to change, you know, and then everyone working together to implement that change, because, you know, good ecological and environmental outcomes, you know, they needn't come at the expense of, you know, farm income, and equally, you know, diverse products. It's fantastic hydroponics trial, I think, up in, I think, Llanllifon. You know, great. Let's get involved with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just before we start to wrap things up, I just want to ask you, Rodri, you manage the Yes Femur account on social media, and you engage quite a lot with Yes Cymru activities on there. Are you encouraged by the support that you're getting on there? Are you surprised?
Yeah, so I became part of the team back in September, and I think, you know, it's grown a lot since then. It you know, Ag is quite good on Twitter. I only manage the Twitter account, and yeah, we've grown some support on there.
Yeah.
It's been quite challenging not getting sort of out and speaking to people. Naturally, the average age of farmers in Wales is actually 56, so I'm not sure how many of them are on Twitter. So it will help once we're out there, you know, really talking to people. What's also been quite strange this sort of autumn, especially looking at sort of the potential headwinds ahead, is, you know, stock prices, you know, lambs, and then that transposes into breeding stock, you know, they've been flying. So people are not wanting really to hear or, you know, discuss about any potential you know problems or solutions, because everything's okay at the minute. But I see an opportunity, I think, in the coming 6 months and then beyond, hopefully when COVID is away, to really engage with the wider farming community than just those on social media.
Yeah. And Rachel, after being involved in this show for the last 40 minutes, have we convinced you? Will you be signing up tomorrow to Yes Cymru?
I don't want to be pitchforked off the podcast or anything, but I think for me, it's still very much is this economic argument. But then again, I suppose it's me seeing perhaps Welsh independence as a movement rather than an overnight success story. Possibly I need to change my mindset perhaps about it. I mean, actually, you know, I sort of studied sort of devolution in quite a lot of detail whilst at university. So, you know, I do think there's potential, but I just think we need to really get things ironed out properly first. But I do think that probably Brexit will be a catalyst for probably quite severe change, won't it?
Yeah. Okay then. Well, just before we go, Rodri, I do want Michael Sheen style rallying cry from you. Why should people who aren't there yet but are perhaps indeed curious join Yes Cymru and the movement for free and win?
Oh, now then. do you want to call for farmers or generally?
No pressure.
Just farmers.
Farmers. Okay. So I think farming in Wales has a fantastic story to sell. And it's now even backed by the science. We need to do our best to sell it, and we can't be dragged down by any other sort of headwinds that will come in our direction. We really need to sell that red dragon. We really need to make sure that we are at the forefront of sustainable production in Wales. And the only way we do that is to ensure that we are independent and in charge of our own destiny.
There you go. There you go.
How's that?
The mic drop there. Okay. Thank you very much, both of you, for taking the time. We did have a lot of more questions and a lot of subjects we got through. I'm sure we could talk for another couple of hours, but that's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for listening to Radio Yes Cymru tonight. Please remember to listen to the show every fortnight, and you can find the podcast across all platforms where you can hear discussion on all subjects relating to a free and independent Wales. Hwyl fawr.
Yes. Yes Cymru Radio.